Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello, and welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast, episode 84. I am Melissa Spence. I am your co-host and your producer, and I'm here with the ED of Indigenous Vision, Suta Calling Last. How have things been going for you?
Good. They've been going really good. How are you? It's life, right? I've got a child homesick. It's Valentine's Day. I don't have a date. Just kidding. It's a beautiful day. The snow is falling, like in that really picturesque cinematic way. And they're big fat flakes that are falling down really slow. And so I'm really trying to enjoy it, because we got hit with winter here right around Halloween, and it's been solid snow on the ground since then. And that hasn't happened in years. And so I'm trying not to complain about the cold or the snow, and I'm trying to really enjoy its presence.
You know what? I was thinking about your region and the winter there, because I was reflecting on going back home, because I have a couple of friends who are probably heading back to Canada. And I thought, if I was to live anywhere where there was winter, it might be where around you are, because it doesn't seem like it's an extreme winter. Like, it's more like a picturesque, you're in a valley. There's a lot of snow, yes. And snow is a lot to deal with. But I don't see extreme temperatures for like weeks on end, unless it just wasn't that type of winter, because it's that type of winter where I'm from.
Oh no. Yeah. We did get a couple weeks of that negative 40 below. It's horrible here. It's cold. Don't move here, anybody. Montana is just a really horrible place to be. Except for Melissa, to our little bowl here in Missoula. And that's what makes Missoula different from the rest of Montana, is that we are in a bowl, a geographic bowl, and it kind of protects us from certain weather systems and keeps other weather systems like tied down here. So we get a lot of cloud coverage and not a lot of, like, there's only one little wind tunnel that comes through our valley. And so, yeah, it's pretty stable weather.
That's great. It's finally warming up here in Las Vegas in the Mojave Desert. I'm super stoked that next month the pools are already opening, because yesterday I went out for a couple hours and I could feel the heat of the sun return. And I thought, there it is. I felt it in my skin. I could feel it almost suntanning me as I was walking around for like 4 hours yesterday. And I thought, of course it's going to be pool season in 1 month. So
wow,
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I bet you are. I just, as you were saying that, this is probably the least golden I've seen you in the 8 years we've known each other.
I'm wearing no makeup right now, but we're on Zoom, and like, this is me. I haven't suntanned in probably since Hawaii, end of November, early December.
Wow. Yeah. We totally soaked up a lot of desert sun from our northern climates. That's what I'm missing the most. And that's what I'm really looking forward to going back and visiting later this spring, going down and checking on our Phoenix office and meeting with some of the partners there, doing some hikes, you know, visiting our old mountains and saying hello. And it's different. Oh my goodness. We've got so many, like, life moves fast at Indigenous Vision. I mean, slow, because for people who've been listening to this show, every show, thank you. It also moves really fast in that, you know, I was really thinking hard about dating and getting a companion or a partner or a boyfriend or a husband. And I got a dog.
You got a dog?
I got a dog. Yes. What? So I was like, wow, that's a lot of responsibility, right? A whole human, right? And being responsible for, you know, I mean, I want that too. I just sometimes play with that, but I got a dog and I figured this would be a good step, because it's part of my whole package, right? Like, whoever I'm dating in the future needs to love dogs, like as much as I love dogs, because I love dogs so much. I want a whole barn that's a kennel for my dogs with like a heated water fountain and everything. So they must be a dog lover. And so that would be really disappointing if I ended up dating somebody and I didn't have a dog right now, you know, like how I am right now. And I ended up dating somebody. And then it turns out that they didn't like dogs or had an allergy to a dog or something. You know, it would just be.
Oh, the cat sad. Allergy is probably another one that gets me too.
Yeah.
Like, how do you bring that up? Do you like dogs? Are you allergic to cats? What's going on with you? What are you about yes. when it comes to animals? Because that's yes. important.
Can we snuggle in bed together with the kitties? Like, right? Like, that sounds like a good Sunday morning for my friend out there, y'all. But it would be sad if they were like sneezing the whole time or they couldn't.
There's like, certain dogs that I'm allergic to that I've gone to people's houses. I don't know if it's because they don't wash them regularly, but I've been around dogs where I've been like totally flared up and I'm like, what is going on? And I'll have to leave. But then there's other dogs that I can like hold and like chill with that are totally fine.
I think it is a dander and like a spit thing. So like dogs who spend a lot of time like cleaning themselves, that's putting that. And I think that's what people's allergy is to the most, the spit, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And then the hair is like an irritant next, but.
So what kind of dog?
Oh my goodness.
Congrats.
Thank you. He is almost going to be two. I will not say that part of the story. I'm not ready for that part of the story yet. But I originally saw him a couple of weeks ago and I looked at his whole profile and his, because he gets checked out by vets and they kind of like observe him to see what his training ability and what he would be like what his drive is and what he likes, what his rewards are and what his challenges are. And so this dog really doesn't like being left in a room alone in a crate, which is totally fine because I have never left a dog alone in a crate. And so I just didn't need that level of holding back for Anna, you know, like I put baby cameras on him before and he slept the whole day when I would leave him home from school. But, you know, there's dogs that like tear apart the couch and stuff like that.
Yes.
They're left alone. So
I've seen that. And I actually had to call some people on my neighbor's dog because he leaves it in a kennel and hasn't trained it. So it barks for hours until it wears itself out. And I unfortunately had to tell the landlord, I'm like, hey man, there's a dog down here all by itself.
Yeah.
Barking its little head off all by itself, probably in its own filth for hours. Like something needs to be done about that. So I'm glad that your dog is not going to be a kennel dog.
Well, I'm going to keep the kennel training because I have to travel and this dog will probably be jumping on an airplane to go to different pieces of land because they will be trained as a, I'm hoping this dog is strong enough to train in a couple of different things. So live find, because I seem to be, I notice when people post on Facebook that they can't find somebody or they're worried about somebody. And I think those are the really critical hours. Like if they're sure, like, especially if they went hunting or hiking or something like that, they're out there, you know?
Yeah.
And they're worried about them. Like there was an older guy from my community who went missing and they spent a couple of days looking for him. And I remember the first day they didn't find him when it got dark and they had to leave. And I'm like, they needed night hikers. And cause I'm a night hiker. I can put my headlamp on. And if I had a dog that was a search and rescue dog, I could have been out there and he could have been maybe found a half a day sooner, maybe. But he was found alive and well and making jokes and he's good. And he just like laid by his fence for a couple of days because he had hurt his back. And he's one of our older, well loved because he drove the bus and he's just, you know, all around and in the community. And so we're really lucky to find him. And so yeah, I'm hoping that this dog can be trained in live find for instances like that, where it takes me 3.5 hours to drive back to where he was and I could have been there and took the night shift or something like that, you know.
That's beautiful because I remember when we were talking with Cola Shippentower that she said that that's so critical, those first like 12 hours. And like when you report it to the authorities, they always give you that spiel about it being 48 hours and then they'll take it seriously.
Right.
Right. So that's like so important to have someone like you in the community with a dog going out when people are saying, you know, maybe it's not that big of a deal. He'll just show up. I would, if I was that was my family member or relative, I would want people to be there immediately.
Yeah. And everybody knew that he was like kind of out in the mountains somewhere on his land and possibly hurt or injured or, and so, yeah, there was a lot of worry. And a dog, I think, would have helped if, even if I had to drive, you know, take a couple hours to situate my life here and then drive the 3.5-4 hour drive, I still would have been there earlier than waiting until the next day to search again. And so I want to train them on live find because there's a problem with, you can only choose one. You can't choose cadaver find or body, like deceased finding and live finding, because I guess the dogs start indicating on all kinds of things when they're cross-trained like that. So I'm live find and a conservation, probably a scat detection.
Cool. Well, I can't wait to meet them. Your dog, Anna, was so amazing. And I'm positive this dog is going to be equally as amazing. So when I come out there in May, I'm hoping to meet them. That'd be so cool.
Ituma for short, which means trailblazer, or the one that we follow, or the one that leads, the one we follow. He's the first dog. And so this is going to be a program. I'm not sure, like I'm trying to stay goal oriented about this and still like keep my heart in check, because I fall hard in love, and there might be a chance that this dog is trained to give to a tribal nation department or work with game rangers and stuff like that. And so hopefully he's the first of many dogs that can be gifted to tribal departments that are looking for, if you work within your tribal nation and you have a tribal department that needs a conservation dog, like a game dog, they can track poachers, they can track weeds, they can track disease like brucellosis and scarpy. A lot of the dogs have been sent to Zimbabwe to game ranges where they've like confiscated guns and ammo, and because they try to sneak them into the game ranges in all kinds of broken up ways. And so Ruger was one of those first dogs. I think we talked about it a few episodes ago, but yes, I'm so excited to get that going. And I'm nervous at the same time, because Anna just set a standard. He was just such a unique dog. He didn't bark. His mom was a cat. He didn't need to be trained. I always tell that story of that one week in finals class where I always had like two or three jobs. My life has always been kind of hairy like that. And so I usually woke up to housekeep really early in the morning and then had some morning classes. And then somewhere in there, I went for a walk with Anna and then dropped him off at daycare and then went to night school, picked him up from daycare, dropped him off at the house and went to night school. That's what our typical day looked like. And one day we were at his school, because he went to school too at PetSmart, and we were supposed to, it was like level 10, like max level last day training. We're supposed to know our stuff. And it was the super hard trick of sit, lay down, roll over and sit back up. And so you have to tell your dog each one of those commands. And we didn't practice at all. We had a week to practice this and we didn't do nothing. We just did our normal schedule. And this dog kept like laying down at my feet and trying to sleep. And I kept trying to like shake him and wake him up. Like, come on, pay attention, Anna, like, look at what the other dogs are doing. Come on. And so I kept shaking him and making him sit up, and he'd get sleepy and lay back down, because we were at the end of the group. And finally it got to us. I told him to sit, lay down, roll over and sit. And he came back up from that rollover, and I was amazed, and I was trying not to show my amazement on my face. And then he laid back down and went to sleep, and he never did it again.
That's so Anna, just like knows what to do and is like, okay, I got this, because I know we're in a school and I need to perform this, but I'm going to sleep after and probably never doing it again.
Yes, I will never roll over for you again.
That's so cute. I'm so happy for you. Well, good for you.
A little black and white cocker spaniel. The black and white, yes. And then so there was a couple things that made me really want to take him. So I'm so excited to start my training. Like, it's a coworker coming in. And now I'm trying to figure out, because a lot of conservation working dogs aren't seen as like the dogs that they allow in, the emotional support dogs, the support dogs or disability dogs. I'm trying to think like what else I can train this dog for so that I can get them into hotels where emotional support dogs are allowed in, but not other dogs. So.
Love where this conversation is going. It is so nice to have you here on the Ivy Podcast. Just wanted to jump in real quick to remind you that our next cultural humility training is coming up in March. You can register your team right now if you have some change makers on your side who are committed and want to learn more about making your work environment a better place to be all the time and continue to grow. Check out our cultural humility training of trainers coming up this March 23rd. Every Thursday and Friday, we'll meet for 2.5 hours over the next two Thursdays and Fridays and go through the Cultural Humility Framework. You can register right now on the Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit Eventbrite page. I have shared the link on our website, indigenousvision.org, and in the show notes for this episode. We will hopefully see you and your team, or maybe just you, in March 2023. All right, back to the podcast. So what else is coming up? I'm actually heading back to the desert. I haven't been anywhere since my hike on Christmas. And that was like a close to the city hike. So I'm looking forward to heading out to the deep desert next week to like look into a telescope and hopefully see some planets, because that's kind of been my goal for the past couple of years. And then sure enough, something popped up on my feed. There's the Eastern Sierra Observatory. That's just a few hundred miles from here, 200 miles, maybe, I don't know, 3 hours drive, let's say, from here in Death Valley, in a pretty remote area. There's a sky pod that I rented. So it's like a little pod that you can see through. It's got a bed inside of it. I'll be able to stargaze. It's like this tiny little camp that's kind of like tucked away under in this road called Indian Bed Road. So I'm going to be asking them about that, but it's only 4 pods that are allowed there. There's a hot tub, a grill, a whole bunch of chairs, and this huge 12-foot telescope that I can look through. Like, that's a dream.
Wow. I wouldn't be able to hold back. I'm like, has there ever been a real Indian in this bed?
I'm going to have to say something like that. I'm going to have to be a little sneaky and cheeky when I roll up and be like, so I'm an actual Indian. I just got off of Indian Bend Road here. So is there any other Indigenous people that ever been here before? Because I would love to be your first.
What's the origin of Indian Bend? Let's map that.
Right. Exactly. Because I was looking at the map and it's like on the western side of Death Valley going towards, you know, the California coast or whatever. And it's like this little area. So I'm like, well, what is the story behind that? Because I would like to know. I'm slowly figuring out some stories around here. There's one about Fremont. Everybody knows Las Vegas. Fremont Street Experience is like this huge thing in the downtown area. There's the Fremont Hotel. And then I just recently discovered that the Fremont was like this guy. I don't know if you want to call him a cavalier, but he was like a general who did a massacre.
Oh, like Cook and St. Valentine.
Yeah. Oh, John C. Fremont was an American explorer, then military officer, and then politician. So the story with this person is that they were part of this terrible massacre at the river. And then they just kind of went on to become a military person and then a politician. And now there's like high schools named after him, the Fremont Experience, of course, and the Fremont Hotel and Casino. No idea.
Wow. Yeah, I would guess maybe there's a relation between Indian Bend and Fremont. And sometimes Indian Bend, is it by the river?
No, there's no
or water. Like a dry riverbed.
Maybe.
A wash, like an old campsite or the massacre site.
But I know that they play around with the alien theme over there as well. There's lots of alien jokes. There's a fake spaceship and there's even an alien mailbox.
Hmm.
So I'm just going to be figuring out and kind of questioning quietly and politely about some of that area. I've never been to that side of the park. The park is huge.
It's amazing we live in a world where questioning is like insulting.
Yeah. Like, I don't want to,
yeah.
Like, who knows who owns this observatory, right? I've tried emailing them and I didn't get a response, but I did book it. And it seems like it's obviously non-Indigenous people, right? That this is a non-Indigenous person who owns this and opens it up only a couple months out of the year because it gets so extremely hot over there. So it's on right now, February to April, and then it's done.
Amazing. Sounds fun.
But again, I don't want to offend because that's the political climate we're in right now. I got to watch how I talk to people about Indigenous stuff sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we're not invited or welcomed everywhere. And it's safety too. One thing.
Oh.
But you know, I think that's culture humility. I was just thinking about that the other day and thinking about how one of those ideas is that we're all prejudice, and until we take that time to reflect and do some introspection, we don't know how. And then that also takes like open dialogue with your circles of like, Melissa, could you give me some feedback on this? like this is the way I feel when I enter the room. I'm just listening to this really great book that's got a lot of thinking points on it. They did talk about imposter syndrome, and I was thinking about you and how
it's that bad, isn't it? It's that bad.
Yes. But it's like, and he didn't have an excellent solution. It wasn't like toxic positivity and I think it's very cultural humility in the acknowledgement that imposter syndrome, it never really, in some cases, will never really go away. You'll always feel that level of comparison and not measuring up to what the systemic and societal values are, or the suppositions for that role, right?
Mm.
And so, and that's what cultural humility is about, breaking those glass ceilings about where and how we see expertise. Like, that's how we'll make society better, is by including these places that we haven't often thought of or looked like to for solutions, right? So, but the solution was not to like hammer away and do like daily work and breathing with your imposter syndrome. It was to communicate openly and honestly with your team and your support group. So like me and the rest of the team and whoever else you work with, or the closest people, not everybody, right? Share with where it's appropriate, that you feel this way or you harbor these feelings. And sometimes it is there with you in the work. And so then me as your team member, you give me that one little look and I'll know you're feeling some way and I'll try to pick it up from there.
I agree. Vocalizing the issue that I, whatever issue it is, really, really helps me. Mm-hmm. I've noticed, like our last cultural humility meeting we had last week, I told you, I am so nervous for this one for some reason. And it just out of nowhere, that just showed up and I had to express myself. And then within the second hour, I was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We can psych ourselves out. And that goes to the brain training, right? Remember, like our brains just like get stimulus and we have to direct it. What that stimulus is. Is it fear or is it excitement? And we've got like that 7 seconds of critical time of feeling that, you know, butterflies in your stomach or like something welling up in your chest. And then you say, no, I'm excited. I'm ready. I'm prepared. And also that's like where culture humility also comes into it, in that ability to say you don't know.
Yes.
Too. And so like, you know, it's really cool in the moment. Culture humility makes you have that level of reflection and introspection where you can actually get to the moment of, is this imposter syndrome or is this something else, you know? So it's like when you sounding board with the team and you get the imposter thoughts, but then also you might know more than you think you know, and where it could be genuine imposter syndrome and just lack of confidence because what you know has never been uplifted in the environment that you might
be. That is so true. What a great way to put it. I was actually feeling some type of way too about this desert excursion I'm going on, because I don't have a vehicle. So I rent them. If people are listening, I'm someone who doesn't own a vehicle. So when I rent a vehicle, I go on these excursions. So there may be 2 to 3 months in between where I get to go out and enjoy the desert or whatever. So I'm planning to go to this one area called Eureka Dunes, which is kind of remote. And I'm feeling some type of way about the road there because it is unpaved and it's kind of rocky, and it's about 40 miles of it, which is long for someone like me. I rented an SUV, so I'm hoping the tires will hold out. But I'm like, what if a tire pops and I'm in this remote area? Will I be able to handle getting back or somehow getting help? I'm just kind of freaked out about that. But I really want to go see these dunes because they're the tallest dunes in North America. Like, they are as big as almost a mountain. Like, they're big. And I love dunes. So I'm just feeling some type of way about going down this 40-mile unpaved road that looks not too rough. Everyone's saying it's not as rough, but I'm like freaked out because I'm worried I'm going to pop a tire by myself because I'm going alone. Or should I save it for when I go with someone, which is who knows how long that's going to take to find someone who wants to go 40 miles down a road to see a dune.
You might have a friend last minute who jumps in with you. And yeah, just make sure you have a jack, make sure you have a spare or a full spare or a donut. And as long as you have that with jack and the,
I can get those back.
Yeah. And then also there's AAA.
It is a rental, and I'll have all the bells and whistles, as you say. So I'm just worried, I'm just so worried I'm going to get there and then my tire is going to deflate and then I'll be stuck. And then I'm like, how do I get a hold of anybody in this remote location and blah, blah, blah.
Well, and that's a good part of planning. Like, every worry is useful at the same time. And so take enough food for a couple of days, enough water for a couple of days, just in case.
People will know I will be at the Eureka Dunes if you don't hear from me.
Oh my goodness. And then you might run across somebody. Like, I always try to have extra food and water for somebody I might find. Never know.
I just purchased my first dehydrated meals because I wanted to try them out. Have you ever tried them?
Yeah, I'm actually just playing with a new trail food, because I usually try to do those freeze dried foods and then you just boil water and pour the stuff in.
Are they good? I'm worried. Am I gonna have a stomach ache?
No, they're good. They're good, especially if you buy them from a sporting goods or a outfitter.
Yeah, they're all plant-based and they look pretty good. So
they're good. You just have to let the water soak in long enough so that it's not hard freeze-dried stuff. it could get gross. But I'm trying out a new recipe right now. I want to make a taco meat mixture with some onions and peppers and some yummy stuff. And then I want to freeze that in little cubes. And then I made some quick minute rice that I could just add hot water to as well. And so it'll be kind of a hamburgery taco rice with beans. I like beans on the trail. I it's just a good food because it's, I don't know, I think the fiber and the protein are
tons of protein.
Yeah, they keep you you're balanced for a while out there.
Definitely lentils, get it all in there.
Yeah, granola bars don't sit that well with me. I think it elevates my sugar a little bit more than beans for or sure. jerkies or something like that. But I try to stick to proteins. Like, I really like these fat bombs, and it's chocolate or cocoa powder mixed with peanut butter, maple syrup. But we should do an episode on our favorite trail food. Let me know what you pick out.
Yeah, I've really come a long way from being a city Indian scared of the bush. Now I conquered my fear. I have my own little stove. I've got my little coolers, one for water, one for food. And I have my whole little arrangement. I'm just in the market for now a little table that I'm going to pick up just before I go, so I can sit down and read and maybe journal out in the desert, because I found having a little table is probably the last thing I could add to my setup, because I have a really comfortable chair. But I'm just really proud of myself for having this little, outback little situation.
I'm so
of
proud
stuff.
Of you.
I've got like
I'm
a
so proud of you.
I got an inflatable light. I've got all this cool stuff that I bought, like camping gear. I have gear now. That's wild.
That's awesome. Yeah, I like that level. I'm total gear junkie. I like to outfit the back of my truck as a camper, like a little camper topper. And so I want that to be a fully enclosed unit. I want to have the bed, and I have a little
For
dresser
sure.
in there with all of my supplies, my water sampling equipment, my muck boots, my waders, my even like face cleaners. There's all kinds of fun stuff in those drawers.
Yeah, like my beauty regime when I'm out there is a little
Exactly.
bit different too.
Oh, I always constantly think like I need to do my mountain beauty routine up here and just make a fun video on that because I'm always talking about it, right? Like I'm always trying to decolonize. I don't know if we should say that word, but like trying to
Indigenize.
indigenize makeup and beauty again, because Native people were running around North America with tattoos and ochre of all colors, like beautiful, all the different shades of red, yellow, blue, and white, and black. And we just went to great extents to show like societal ties, special medicine powers, special family designs, coup powers. Everything was embodied in what European society would think is like a vain practice, right? But these had like spiritual ties and spiritual meanings and significance of like major life events. And I just think it was so cool how beautiful Indigenous people looked when we were in our finest.
Right, and I kind of do a today version of that by doing this, elaborate look. I have a lot of tattoos. I have a striking appearance and it brings me a lot of pride. And I was thinking about this, watching this wonderful speaker talk about, the ritual of getting ready. Like getting ready is probably my favorite thing in the whole world. Sometimes I'm lucky enough to get ready twice in one day. If I have a lot going on, I can get ready twice. But it's like you're decorating yourself, right? You're really showing the outside world that you are this beautiful creation that gets to walk in this life. And it's almost like you're adorning yourself as a human altar, in my opinion. It's almost like getting ready for ceremony.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, one time when I was a young girl, me and an older older, she's the same age as me. We're older now.
Ageism.
We are older dancers. We have been dancing since the mid 80s, but we grew up in a time of powwows where there were a lot of the old school ladies still powwowing, like the first grandmas of and aunties of the powwow. And they used to tell me, and it was the same experience for her, in that they used to tell me when I was wearing my traditional dress that I wasn't supposed to French braid my hair, that I would do two braids down on each side, like a traditional dancer, and leave the fancy stuff for the fancy dancers and the jingle dress dancers, and that my role is to represent and embody these traditional, graceful movements and that. And so then I was also a jingle dress dancer, and I show up to the same powwow in like three different dresses because I don't compete and I just love to dance. And I show up with like a part in my hair that I've been doing since I was little, which is a little lightning part. And she said, "Oh, I haven't seen that hairstyle for a long time. All the old people used to do it when they had a certain power." And I was like, "Oh," and she said, "it looks good on you." And she didn't say what the power was, but she said, "it looks good on me." And I was just, 12 or something like that. And
Wow.
so now that's my hairstyle now. I'll just part it down the middle with a little lightning strike. So that's like the Native and Indigenous beauty, right? Is even our hairstyles have significance and power. And so there's like the top knot that Blackfoot medicine men will do of a certain, there's certain societal hairstyles that are tied to these different things. And so I just think it's so cool the way beauty can be spiritual, it could be empowering, it could be make you distinct and unique and set you apart in a place of honor amongst your community. I think that European society is really missing out on It's like, would it be like a 2D vision of what makeup Definitely. And paint, and it's like, it's just vanity, right? That's why I'm always fighting the vanity is vain, because that's one of the first European assumptions about Blackfoot people that was written in a journal, is when they saw us, they said that we were prideful to the point of vanity. And what they were remarking on was our excellent craftsmanship on our dresses and our war shirts and our headdresses, our war bonnets, our stand-up headdresses, our beadwork, our face paint. We even like painted our horses and made beadwork for them. And it was just, there was no doll even left unadorned. And so it was a very fancy, beautiful, ornate life.
They were jealous. They're just jealous.
Yes, they're being some way. So love every part of yourself and love every part of others as they present themselves, because you don't know their cultural context and backgrounds for how they bring themselves and present themselves. So love each other.
Thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. We want to give a big shout out to our new friends over at Third Line Hockey, whose goal is to provide an atmosphere of camaraderie, friendship, and support. And they also want to meet like-minded people to help create some new memories. Third Line Hockey is based on the principles of diversity, equality, and inclusion. They strive to create a vibrant and safe space, a space where all people of all backgrounds and skill levels come together and have fun. Whether you're an introvert, an extrovert, no matter the race, religion, gender expression, color, sexual orientation, or marital status, you are welcome at Third Line Hockey. They have co-ed hockey tournaments for adults at any skill level, and you can register today. For example, there is a tournament happening in fabulous Las Vegas from April 7th to 9th, and guess who's going to be there? The Indigenous Vision team. So check out the website, thirdlinedraft.com. I will share the link in the show notes for this episode. Thanks again for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. As always, visit our website, indigenousvision.org, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook. You'll find us at Indigenous Vision Media.